Good morning. Go ahead and grab a seat and we'll get started. Good to see everyone this morning. If anyone hasn't said this to you already, I'll be the first. Welcome to All Saints Day. Anyone else said that to you yet? Anyway, today is All Saints Day, the day after Halloween. Actually, Halloween's only a day because it's the day before All Saints Day. But anyway, hopefully you will have a good day. Hopefully Halloween went well. You know, it's interesting. My dad passed away back in December. One of the last conversations I remember having with him was one about Halloween. And it was funny because we were talking about Halloween, how holidays have changed. I mean, and I know even in my lifetime, Halloween's become such a big deal now, which it wasn't that. I mean, in a different way it was a deal, but not like it is today. But my dad was, I remember him telling me, he said, and of course he grew up in the Depression, he said, you know, we didn't celebrate Halloween. And I said, really? I thought it had been around for a while, but I was surprised. And he said, no, we didn't celebrate Halloween. We simply went to the neighbor's house and ate popcorn. And I said, oh, okay. He said, and if they didn't give us popcorn, then we usually took the gate off their fence and ruined something. And I said, well, hence the word trick-or-treat, right? And he goes like, no, we didn't do trick-or-treat. Like, no, you did do trick-or-treat. It just was popcorn. But anyway, but that was one of my last conversations with my dad. So welcome to our class this morning. It's also Central Standard Time. It's our first day of Central Standard Time, so welcome to that. If you're here expecting the assembly to start and you forgot to change your clock, I'll give you a minute to go back home for an hour and come back. I figured it this way, you know, this time when we change our clocks, you go to class and church, and then in the spring, you'll just miss everything altogether. So it kind of evens itself out, I guess, over the year. But anyway, welcome to our class this morning. I guess my public service announcement I want to mention, don't forget to vote on Tuesday. So that's, I want to make sure we say that. So we've been talking about this idea of a spiritual debrief of our social crisis. And so we're going to continue into that this morning. We continue to talk about this topic. The theme that I really emphasized last week was you live what you believe. And the importance of understanding that one simple principle, you live what you believe. And we talked about fear last time, and that courage is not the absence of fear, but the confronting of fear with faith. That we don't, I mean, a lot of times I think, particularly all of us, maybe in our arrogance or our pride or our machoism, want to kind of pretend that we're not afraid, but I've yet to meet somebody who's not afraid about some things. The question isn't whether you're afraid or not. It's what you're going to do when you face those things. And we talked about last week that a lot of times the restrictive or the negative aspect of our fear is that many times we're not willing to face them. And so then we simply restrict our lives based on our fears. And so then we can end up kind of paralyzing ourselves. And that many times can either contributes to or even is exasperated through addiction, where fear becomes a driving force in our lives, and eliminating those things and protecting ourselves from those things becomes of critical importance. What I want to begin with this morning is, if you have a Bible, turn to 1 Samuel 17. I want to look at this story for a minute and kind of understand what happens here. So in 1 Samuel 17, beginning in verse 4, it says, "And there came about from the camp of the Philistines a champion named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits in a span. He had a helmet of bronze on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze, and he had bronze armor on his legs and a javelin of bronze slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron. And his shield bearer went before him. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, 'Why have you come out to draw up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? Are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then he will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us. And the Philistine said, I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Now, this goes on for like 40 days, this battle, this kind of impasse, if you will. And I guess the point I want to make in reading this is, if you really think through this, if you weren't afraid, you should be, right? I mean, this is an imposing character that, you know, in all practical circumstances has not only the upper hand, but the upper everything regarding this battle. He has experience, he has the size, he has the equipment. I mean, everything says don't mess with Goliath. And I think it's important that, you know, when I face, because a lot of times when we're in conversations about our fears, we assume that what people are telling us is that they're not taking our fear seriously. Well, they're just, you need to get over it, man. You know, well, no, it's legitimate that we have legitimate things to be afraid of. I mean, we've gone through the coronavirus thing we're going through, right? I mean, there's a lot of discussion. How bad is it? The reality is, yes, it's bad, and it's worthy of fear. Then what do you do? That becomes the question. What do you do at that point? And that's where we have a lot of different responses, right? Is how do we handle our fear? And I think it's really important that, one, I have to be willing to legitimize the fact that these things are worthy of our fear. If North Korea has nukes pointed at us, that's worthy of fear. If we're afraid, if we lose our job and we're afraid about things economically, that's worthy of fear. If we live in a difficult environment or a bad climate, if we live in an inner city where there's riots and stuff going on, it's worthy of fear. I mean, we look at the future of America, and we look at some of the decisions that are being made, election coming up on Tuesday, and there's some good reasons to be afraid. That's true, as much as Goliath is true. And so it's not that we should dismiss the fact that these are fearful things, that these are uncertain times, that these are scary situations. That's true. The question is, what are you going to do? How are you going to face it? What are you going to do in the face of a Goliath? And if you go on, of course, the story goes, over this 40-day period, eventually David shows up. David is the youngest of his brothers. He is basically going out to deliver food and supplies to his brothers while they're shivering out of fear in tents, scared to death of Goliath. Now, David's a little dismayed by that. And it says in verse 31, when the words that David spoke were heard, they were repeated before them and Saul, and he sent for him. So David says, hey, this can't be. So they go, wow, we'll take you to Saul, see what Saul says about you. And so then David tells King Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. And Saul said to David, you're not able to go against the Philistine to fight with him, for you are but a youth, and he has been a man of war from his youth. So, I mean, you're a kid. You're not even in the army. Why would we send you out there? Right? I mean, that's kind of the conversation. That doesn't make any sense at all. But David said to Saul, your servant used to keep sheep for his father. And when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb from the flock, I went after him and struck him and delivered him out of his mouth. And he arose against me, and I caught him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears, and this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them. For he has defied the armies of the living God. And David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. And Saul said to David, go and the Lord be with you. So let's think about this a second. You know, the facts are the facts. I mean, David's heard Goliath's claims and has seen him and knows exactly what he's facing. He apparently relates him at best to a bear and a lion. So that's, I mean, neither one of those would I want to face either. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want to face those. That would be just as bad as Goliath. So I wouldn't want to do that one either. But what's David's point here? What's he trying to say? And this, I know, is a time when we're supposed to run a microphone around, but I don't. So does somebody want to run the microphone around? I got a question now. No? Okay. There's a microphone right here. Okay. Chris is going to do it again. Okay, David's going to do it. Okay. He does need exercise. All right, so what is David thinking here? That's my question. What's kind of his response to the situation? We don't need a microphone. Never mind. Okay. Okay. You were going to take it either way. All right. All right, all right. So standing on the promise of God. That sounds like a good song if anyone wants to write that one. Would be one of the reasons. Dave, were you going to say something? Apparently the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Right? All right, good deal. Anything else? Think someone? Okay, and let me, what David does here is he stands on a promise and then he extrapolates an experience, right? In other words, it's not like he's ever fought a giant like Goliath before or ever fought a Philistine before. However, he has had some battles and he has been victorious. God has delivered him in those things. So therefore, he concludes, God will probably deliver me for this one too. And here's the deal, right? We all face fears, and the question becomes, when I face difficult times in the past, do I use that as a building block for the next thing I'm going to face? Because the next thing may be a little bigger and a little more challenging and a little harder and a little scarier than the ones I faced before. And the point that I experience victory in these other ones gets me ready for the bigger one, right? And so I should be learning from these experiences. Well, if God can deliver me from that, if God can deliver me from that, I imagine he can deliver me from that too. And so that becomes kind of that faith-building experience. Anybody else? Something David was thinking or believing over here.
Maybe a few feet bigger, but he still doesn't have the favor of God.
Okay. All right. So not only am I walking in the promise of God, but I'm dealing with somebody who isn't, right? So I need to recognize that. And I think that's an important perspective as well, right? Sometimes the things that intimidate us are things that are not of God. And we need to remember we are of God, so that gives us an upper hand, right? So it's a good point. Hey, don't want to do that.
He fears still in him, but he's actually more afraid of this reigning king than he is of Goliath. So he actually, it's kind of an interesting little mix of stuff for him. So, anyway,
okay.
So he brings out the idea, yeah, I feel a lion and a bear, and that should be good enough. I'm not a big one of the king.
Okay, all right, all right. You got to play your cards right, right?
Exactly.
Hold some of your cards, play the others. I got you. Any other thoughts about what David was believing? Jonathan?
Another thing about David how to become a king, and when David was walking the sea, his father Jesse gave him city of the deposit himself as God. God told him he would become king, and now he said you must have he is the most king of all. And now he said David will go to the side of Philistine. And now, like, David was scared, and he was scared of Goliath. And now, David had faith with God. And he told Goliath himself, and he says, cannot come out with sticks, cannot come out with dogs. I have faith in God, and I have believed in Jesus. Now I do believe in Jesus. So it happened. David picked out a stone, put it in his pocket, and he threw a stone to Goliath in his head. And Goliath fell down and died, and he cut his head off. And then David was a hero, and then he saved him. And now David is scared of Saul. Saul wants to kill David because David wants him. And now Saul has a son. King Jonathan. That's my name.
That's your name.
The Bible himself.
All right. All right. Thank you, Jonathan. You kind of ran ahead of my story a little bit, but I'm good with that. We need to switch spots at some point. Mr. Goad.
I know the point of the story was Jonathan. So the first thing I noticed here is David said, was, what should be done to the man who killed this guy? And they told him, oh, you'll be rich, you'll have the king's daughter, and your father's house will be free. So they could think it was all like personal motives to do this. I mean, thinking outside of himself, maybe, like, make my father's house free in Israel, that might have been a huge thing.
Okay. All right. And certainly, right. Okay, go ahead, Chris.
I like to think that David looked at everybody and they were making things more difficult. They really were worrying about it. It's okay to be afraid, but he said, I got a rock, and that's all I need. God's trying to give me all this stuff. And taking so long to do something about it, really, this is all I need to do.
Okay. All right. So, what David does then in verse 41, it says, and the Philistine moved forward and came near to David with his shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. And the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine said to David, come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the field. Then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head, and I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistine this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand. When the Philistine arose and came in near to meet David, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. David put his hand in his bag, took out a stone, and slung it and struck the Philistine on his forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell on his face to the ground. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone, and struck the Philistine and killed him. There was no sword in the hand of David. You see the victory here. You see what happens when somebody believes and is willing to believe the things that we're saying here and then act on that belief. Doesn't change the fact that Goliath's not intimidating. Doesn't change the fact that he isn't worthy of our fear. But what are you going to do with it? That's the point. And so David obviously trusted the Lord. That was the thing that took him into that. And he trusted some very specific things. I mean, he could have stayed in a tent cowering like everybody else and hope that somehow lightning from heaven would come and strike a Goliath and get that thing resolved, or a tree would fall, or he'd have a heart attack, or something. I mean, a guy that big, he couldn't be that healthy. It'd be something that would cause it. Maybe there would be internal strife among the Philistines and they'd get in an internal civil war and resolve things. I mean, you know, there's a lot of ways we could be praying that God resolve it. David chose to take action on his faith and saw the victory. And so I think it's important that we recognize that. Now, here's the deal. We can all say those things, and yet it's another thing to have to act on them. You know, one of the things that I find a lot of times in the church and over my lifetime has been that we'll all agree with that idea, but then how do we end up practicing it, and what is it we need to believe in order to do so? Because a lot of times we will kind of come along, we'll see our brother or sister, they'll be worried, and we'll just kind of, you know, want to be like Bobby McFerrin, don't worry, be happy. You know, come on, just sing a song, whistle, and everything will go away. Or that we challenge them. You know, where's your faith? You need to have faith. Now I'm going to guilt trip you into doing something about it. And so a lot of times our answers aren't particularly good when we handle those things. Now remember my statement. We said you live what you believe. The rest of that is, you know, then if you want to change your living, in other words, change the way that your life looks, then you have to change what you're believing. That becomes fundamental to our faith, fundamental to transformation, is we got to begin to believe the things that God would have us to believe. A lot of times the challenge is we sit around in the safety of our lives and kind of make big, bold proclamations until we find ourselves in difficult circumstances, and then immediately you begin to see what we really believe when we react to the things that are in our lives. And I mentioned the other day, last week, you know, that a lot of times what we've done in our culture is we run to medicine or something like that. You know, I mentioned the story about being on a plane and people just, the answer is take a Valium, we don't have to worry about it anymore, instead of really dealing with it. And a lot of times that's what we've done as a society, is we have simply medicated ourselves through difficult times, slept through them basically, and therefore we never get any coping techniques or any faith built in order to deal with them. We just learn to sleep through them and not deal with them. Now, let me mention, I mean, as much as I know we do that in our society, there are times when we have physical things and even chemical issues that we need to take medicine for. So don't dismiss that whole thing. I just think it's easy in our society to kind of run into that. I mean, someone has diabetes and she has to take insulin shots on a regular basis and that kind of stuff. It's not like, well, just believe and you don't have to do insulin anymore. I take medicine for certain things, but I think at the same time, there are things that we kind of run to that easy solution instead of dealing with the faith challenges that are before us, and we end up, I think, minimizing our lives and limiting ourselves. And so the reality is this: your life reveals your faith. What you do says what you believe. You can say all day long what you believe, but your life, what you do, will tell us what you believe. And one of the things that I just wanted to emphasize to us, and I want to kind of go in a little different direction here, is that I do want us to go past just simply the advice of don't be afraid, get better faith, do better at that, do better at this, and be dismissive, because I think that ends up missing the point. And I want to share this with you because I think in many cases the church sometimes looks like this Bob Newhart sketch that I think fits.
Dr. Switzer?
Yes, come in. I'm just washing my hands.
I'm Catherine Bigman. Janet Carlisle referred me.
Oh, yes. You are being buried alive in a box.
Yes. Yes, that's me. Should I lay down?
Oh, no. We don't do that anymore. Just have tea. And let me tell you a bit about our billing. I charge $5 for the first 5 minutes. And then absolutely nothing after that. How does that sound?
That sounds great. Too good to be true, as a matter of fact.
Well, I can almost guarantee you that our session won't last the full 5 minutes. Now, we don't do any insurance billing, so you would either have to pay in cash or by check.
Wow, okay.
And I don't make change.
All right.
Go.
Go.
tell me about the problem that you wish to address.
Oh, okay. Well, I have this fear of being buried alive in a box. I start thinking about being buried alive and I begin to panic.
Has anyone ever tried to bury you alive in a box?
No, but truly thinking about it does make my life horrible. I mean, I can't go through tunnels or be in an elevator or in a house, anything boxy.
So what you're saying is you're claustrophobic.
Yes, that's it.
All right, well, let's go, Catherine. I'm going to say two words to you right now. I want you to listen to them very, very carefully. Then I want you to take them out of the office with you and incorporate them into your life.
Well, shall I write them down?
Well, if it makes you comfortable, it's just two words. Most we find most people can remember them.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Okay, you're there.
Stop it! Stop it?
Yes, S-T-O-P, new word, I-T.
So, what are you saying?
You know, it's funny. I say two simple words, and I cannot tell you the amount of people who say exactly the same thing you're saying. I mean, this is not Yiddish, Catherine. This is English. Stop it.
So, I should just stop it.
There you go. I mean, you don't want to go through life being scared of being buried alive in a box, do you? I mean, that sounds freak.
Yes.
Then stop it.
I can't. I mean, it's been with me since childhood.
No. We don't go there. Just stop.
So I should just stop being afraid of being buried alive in a box.
You got it. Good go. Well, it's only been 3 minutes, so that will be $3.
Actually, I only have a five, so.
Well, I don't make change.
Then I guess I'll take the full 5 minutes.
Fine. All right. Well, what other problems would you like to address?
I'm bulimic. I stick my fingers down my throat.
Stop it! Not of some kind? Don't do that.
But I'm compelled to. My mom used to call me
fat. No. No, we don't go there.
But I've been having this dream.
No, we don't go there either.
But my horoscope did say.
We definitely don't go there. Just stop it. What else?
Well, I have self-destructive relationships with men.
Stop it! You want to be with a man, don't you?
Yes.
Well, then stop it. Don't be such a big baby.
I wash my hands a lot.
That's all right.
It is?
I wash my hands all the time. There's a lot of germs out there. Uh-huh. Yeah, don't worry about that.
I'm afraid to drive.
Well, stop it! How are you going to get around? Get in the car and drive, you kook!
Stop it! You stop it! You stop it!
What's the problem, Kat?
I don't like this. I don't like this therapy at all. You're just telling me to stop it.
And you don't like it?
No, I don't.
So you think we're moving too fast, is that it?
Yes. Yes, I do.
All right, then let me give you 10 words that I think will clear everything up for you. You want to get a pad and a pencil for this one?
All right.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here are the 10 words. Stop it or I'll bury you alive in a box!
So, Have you ever been in a session? Do you ever, I mean, I guess my point is, sometimes our answers sound like that, don't they? To us, when we're afraid, when we're overwhelmed, is people come along and just kind of tell us, stop it. And in the church, many times, what the message is that we hear a lot of times is, you ought to be faithful. You to believe God, trust God, and just stop doing that. And as was mentioned in there, I mean, if we have similar phobias, then that's okay, right? There's lots of germs out there. But if we got ones that are different than ours, then we think that's silly and you're a kook, right? And so I think it's important. The question becomes, what do we do and kind of what do we believe? And there's a passage in Isaiah, and for the next, I guess, 15 minutes that I have, I want to try to share what this passage says, because as Israel faces a time of great uncertainty, he says, but you, Israel, my servant Jacob, whom I have chosen, the offspring of Abraham, my friend, you whom I took from the ends of the earth and called from its farthest corner, say to you, you are my servant. I have chosen you and not cast you off. Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. And I want to emphasize five things that this passage says that he calls us to believe. Here's the deal. A lot of us don't want to do things. But the question is, what are we going to do to not do what we don't want to do? So I'll give you an illustration of this. I like to play golf. And as I've learned over the years, that when you stand up on a hole and you're getting ready to hit a shot, and you notice that there's a huge pond of water right in front of you, the first thing people do is they think, okay, I don't want to hit it in the water. But then they'll switch out their good ball for a bad ball, because that way when they do hit it in the water, they won't feel like they lost as much. So while they're saying one thing, they're actually practicing something different, correct? And then it's amazing to me. I've watched it over and over again. A person will hit all good shots all day long. Then they'll get into that hole where there's water in front of it, and they'll hit one and top it and roll it right in the water. Hadn't hit a shot like that all day, but they'll hit it that way then, because all they can think about is what they don't want to do. And see, my suggestion is ignore the water. Do what you've done on every other shot. Think about where you want it to go. It's amazing how many times it goes there. If you just start thinking about what I do want to do instead of avoiding what I don't want to do, that helps resolve a lot of things. Does that make sense? So, and so it's, what am I going to believe in the midst of my fear? What am I going to believe with the Goliath? What am I going to believe with claustrophobia? What am I going to believe when I'm in an elevator and I feel like I'm buried alive in a box? What am I going to believe then? Becomes the thing that I need to deal with. And there's five things he mentions here. So I'll kind of run through these quickly. You might want to jot them down. They're more than two words, so you may want to write them down. And consider these. Fear not. First one he says is, for I am with you. I am with you. And I think that's incredibly important that we recognize that God is with us. It was what David recognized as he faced Goliath, right? I know that God is with me. Me. And I think understanding his presence is critically important. If you remember when God was leading his people out of Egyptian bondage, one of the things he tried to do was give them the assurance that he was with them. So they saw a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night as a constant reminder to them that they weren't out in the wilderness by themselves, that he was with them. I'm going through this with you. And I think about what we need when we go through difficult times. Sometimes all we need is to know that we're not alone. I mean, you know, when Jesus is in the boat with the disciples and he's asleep while they're facing the fear of the Sea of Galilee, they wake Jesus up because they assume that his sleeping implies that he doesn't care. And I wonder at times what they expected Jesus to do. What he does, obviously, overwhelms them in fear, and creates fear for them. But I think what they really wanted him to do is just kind of be with them in their fear. Maybe bail some water, maybe assure us we're going to be okay, maybe, you know, give us some good words of encouragement. But God promises that he is with us. If you think about as Jesus leaves this world, he says, "And lo, I'm with you always to the very end of the age." As a promise, you're not going to face anything alone. Nothing alone, for I'm with you. And in Psalm 23, the shepherd's psalm, "For even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil." This is David speaking, right? "I will fear no evil, for you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me." I'm walking through the valley of the shadow of death. It's not a promise that, you know, "Oh, don't worry about it, valley of shadow of death. It's not a big deal." That's not what it says. It's scary. It's legitimately scary. That's not denied. The question is, am I alone? Or is God with me? And so one of the fundamental things that we need to believe is that he is with me, period. That whatever I'm facing, I'm not facing it alone. In fact, at the end, at the beginning of Joshua's, at the end of Moses' life, he says, "Have I not commanded you, be strong, courageous, do not be frightened and not be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." I'm with you with this. Don't be afraid. You're not alone. The second thing he says is prominence. "I am your God. There is no other." And we have, obviously, if you think about the first four commandments, right? They emphasize the idea that God is with us, that God is our God. "I am your God. You'll have no other God before me. Don't make idols." I mean, all this about understanding the prominence that God takes in your life. And if God's big enough in your life, then all the problems become small. I think what we want to do in our world is we kind of want to pretend that the big problems of our lives are small, that they're little, that people go, "Oh, that's nothing." And what we're trying to do is basically shave down the big mountain. That's not what the Bible gives as the answer. The Bible's answer is God's bigger than your problems. That's what we trust in. Your problems are huge. But God's huger. That work? Okay. And so understand that he is God, that he is bigger than anything that we're going to ever face. And so, you know, as we face the things we're facing, we have a virus, okay? We have a virus, pandemic, spreading the world. Is God bigger than that? Yes. We have an election, Tuesday. What's going to happen? Is America going to survive? Will it fall? What's going to happen? Is God bigger than that? Yes. I mean, whatever we face, we got civil unrest going on, right? I mean, there's a lot of racial tension. Is God bigger than that? Yes. In fact, in Habakkuk, I love this verse, as Habakkuk is struggling with the very things we're struggling with here. As he's crying out to God, "Why are you allowing these things to happen?" Habakkuk comes to the realization, "But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him." God hasn't left charge. He hasn't fallen asleep. He hasn't left his post. Nothing's spiraling out of control. I mean, sometimes I think that we think that the world is kind of, that God kind of fumbled here. Oh no, wouldn't pay attention to a virus. Oh no, how'd we do that? Or that somehow, because things are the way not going the way I like them to, that somehow God's kind of bobbling something. Whoa, 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 boy, I let that one get away. No, he's on his temple, in his temple, and he's sitting on the throne. That has not changed. In fact, probably a good question to ask is, what does God want to accomplish through this, right? I don't care what it is. What is God doing here? I don't always know what that is, but if you ride along with him long enough, it may become clear at some point. So just ride him along through it, okay? Third thing he says is, "I will strengthen you." Here's the deal. Every problem we face, we do not have the ability to overcome. That's the point. If I could do it myself, God becomes irrelevant. that what he's going to do is he's going to strengthen us to face the problems that are bigger than us, that are more overwhelming than us, that scare us. It scares us because it's outside our power to handle it. What a great opportunity to discover God's power and his strength and what he can do where I cannot. His power is manifest, Paul discovers, through our weaknesses. So we boast in our weaknesses that the glory of God may be shown. Little children, you are from God and have overcome them, for he who is in you is greater than he who is in the world. What is the immeasurable greatness of his power to us who believe, according to the working of the great might that he worked in Christ when he raised him from the dead and seated him at the right hand in the heavenly place? This is Paul's prayer, and he wants us to understand that the same power that raised Jesus from the dead, the same power that exploded out of a tomb, is within us. So live that way. Embrace that according to the riches of his glory. He may grant you to be strengthened with power through his Spirit in your inner being. I will help you. Provision. I will help you. Again, in the wilderness, if you remember the story, right? God provided for over 1 million people out in the wilderness where there was no food with daily manna, right? And originally when they saw the manna, they scraped it up and took boatloads of it home with them, right? Whoa, we got to get plenty. We got to have a month's worth of supply. Only to find what? That the next day it was maggot-filled and moldy and smelly and stunk. And it wouldn't work. Because God, they had to discover, the point was, it was daily, right? I need God to come through every day. Not just once a month. Not just weekly. Not just annually. I need his help always. That never stops. See, I think a lot of times we find ourselves in difficult circumstances. We say, okay, I'll trust God now because the water's over my head. But soon I'll get my head above the water and then he won't be relevant anymore. Now let me ask you a question. If God wants to have a relationship with you that's continual, and he knows that you're going to do that, why would he let you get your head above the water? Because as soon as you do, you're going to cast him off. As soon as you do, you're going to treat him as irrelevant. I will help you. He will provide for us. Jesus emphasized that manna idea, right? When he, in the prayer, his Lord's prayer, give us this day our daily bread. Daily. I need God on Monday, and I need him on Tuesday, I need him on Sunday, I need him on Thursday. I need him 365 days a year, and that means 366 on leap years. It's daily. Jesus said to them, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never thirst. He is our bread. He is our manna. He is our daily bread. And the last one is protection. I will uphold you. I will protect you. In Matthew 18, the disciples come to Jesus and say, who's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And calling to him a child, he put him in the midst of them and said, truly I say to you, unless you turn and become like children, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. Whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Now, interestingly, I wish we had a lot of time to look at this. We spend all our lives trying not to be that way. We do everything we can to become self-protected, self-determined, independent, all these kind of things. And in so doing, we continue to educate ourselves and move ourselves out of the kingdom of God. Jesus said the way you move into the kingdom is by humbling yourself and become a child. Now, why don't we want to do that? Because it's vulnerable. Because we get hurt. And why do we do it? Because when we do, we now depend on God's protection and not our own. Those are beliefs that we can stand on that will help us overcome our fear. Thank you.